What's up, everybody? I stole your intro, bud.
Howdy ho, friends.
But welcome back. This is another episode of Living Life Intently. It's a Live Life Intense podcast. If you don't know, we're a Cape Breton adventure brand, campground, and tour company. And I'm your host, one of the hosts, Lee Frazier. And joining me is, you know, Mr.
Jonathan Canary.
Yeah, there you go. So I guess this week, we actually, to be honest, we didn't really have anything organized. So we figured we'd do, you know, something talking about, you know, with all the weather changing, it's getting a little warmer out, even though we still have a lot of snow on the ground here in Marguerite. It was like +7 today. It's coming into spring, and we want to talk about some stuff to look forward to for the summer, right?
Clocks are going forward on Saturday.
Yep.
Clocks are going ahead.
Yep.
So it's a little milder out there, so.
Yep, there's still snowmobiles out, but you know, and you still snowshoe and ski, but it is getting, I mean, we might say this and then next week we get hit and it's like -20.
Yeah, I think we're getting a bunch of rain on the weekend, so.
Well, you know, whatever. But yeah, so we figured we'd talk about some stuff about summer, the look ahead for the summer season. I'm sure most people are starting to kind of look forward to warmer weather and think about things that are going to be happening and, you know, trips they want to do this summer. I can't even talk. My God, that's horrible.
I hear there's a big canoe trip coming up, Lee.
There's not a big canoe trip. No. Pack raft trip and paddleboard trip.
Oh, pack raft trip.
Yeah. So that, I don't know if people listening, I hope everybody in the East Coast knows what a pack raft is. I mean, I didn't like 2 years ago. So we ended up buying some this year, and it just at a circumstance was because we couldn't get our hands on a lot of other inventory and they were available. But, you know, they would be the perfect items for the Marguerite River. And that's what I thought when I was talking to the sales rep and looking up the videos online. So we're getting some in the spring. We're going to hit the rivers with them. And then we're going to be selling a multi-day trip similar to the one we did down the Marguerite last year. If people followed us on social, we did this four-day canoe trip down the Marguerite River. We went to the very top, the headwaters, as high as we could go with enough water, and we paddled from there to the harbor. And it took about pretty much four full days of paddling, navigating the river, because the upper river has a lot of white water, a lot of rapids. So, last year while we're on the trip, I looked at everybody and I said, there's no way I'm marketing this and trying to take people as like a guided trip. But hey, here we are. I found a better tool for the job, and we're going to be hosting a four-day trip down the Marguerite River this coming June, ending at the Marguerite Harbor, starting way up in the Highlands, camping at our place or in the glamping tents, whatever you guys want, whoever's joining. And we're capping it off with a private dinner at the Bite House in Bedeck. So pretty excited about that one.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah, well, maybe you'll come and almost die again.
Maybe.
Speaking about dying, I hope everybody liked that podcast we did last week. Jonathan actually did all the work and everything on that. All I did was throw some EQs and mastering stuff. But yeah, man, did you get much feedback from that episode?
I got a ton of feedback, man. A lot of people really enjoyed that episode. So I think maybe after our future trips like this, we'll do a breakdown trip. We'll do a breakdown podcast just like that. And yeah, I hope it inspired some people. We got a lot of great feedback. The formatting was quite a bit different than we usually have. So I'm really glad it worked out.
Did you get any feedback on the shit rope ad?
I got a lot of laughs on the shit rope ad. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, shout out to Jamie Foltz for helping me put that one together.
Yeah, it was, I was dying laughing. And for those of you who don't know, he sent me the audio. And if you listen to it again, you hear the echoes, the shit, rope in the background. I just added a couple little things with literally, I like pressed record
no
on
more
the
shit.
Oh, yeah. No more shit. I was like, I literally recorded it off the laptop's mic and I just put it in the thing and put an echo on it. And I was like, it's good enough. So
that's great.
Yeah, what was some of the feedback you got from it? Like, what's like the, give me the two top, top feedbacks.
Comments. I think like, you know, a few people reached out to me, who had expressed interest in a trip like this before, that didn't really see the benefit of having a guide and support team and paying the money for that.
Yeah.
And then after listening to the podcast, they had reached out and said, oh, wow, okay, we understand now why it costs money and why you need support to do something like this. Just having experienced guides and experienced people ready to you know, take care of everybody. It was that they found that really, really
helpful. Inspiring.
Helpful. Yeah. Inspiring.
I'm
drifting off here. Go
ahead. Yeah. Well, no, it's all, I mean, that's kind of like the general thought. I mean, that's how I thought, and I'm the one guy, but that's how I grew up here in Nova Scotia. And that's kind of what I thought, because things, you know, stuff here in Nova Scotia, is very accessible for most people as in terms of like adventures and stuff you can do. And, you know, things aren't so the Highlands trip is one thing that is completely different than anything else you're going to end up doing here in Nova Scotia, because once you are back there, you're back there. It's not like you can walk out, like, you know, any backcountry hike, specifically say Paulet's Cove. I mean, that's an easy hike, maybe not an easy hike, but it's like comparable to being back in the Highlands. If you get hurt in Paulet's Cove, it's like a 2-hour walk out, you know what I mean? So, and back there in the Highlands, if you do not know what you're doing or don't have the proper experience, things can go quite bad quite quickly. It's also about the terrain back there, right? So there's a lot of like little valleys and nooks that if you do not, you know, if you go south of it or if you go west of it or whatever, you're in for like, you know, quite a bit of backtracking and adding K's on and not know where to cross. Like there's all that stuff. So as far as like guiding in Nova Scotia, I hear the same stuff from like fishing guides too, because people come to Margaree and they just want to rent gear and go fishing, and they don't see the value in hiring like say a fly fishing guide. But what the fly fishing guide is teaching you how to fish the holes, like the local knowledge of how the fish, which holes the fish, how to cast, how to land, all that stuff. So it's almost like your expenses, it's almost like going to school. It's like a mini version of school. You're going to pay someone to educate you to be a better person at that task. That's kind of how I look at it now.
And so the other thing that I had some people comment on is that, you know, we had a really diverse crew with us this time, age-wise, experience-wise, and we actually had a lot of ladies.
Which was awesome.
Yeah, it was really, really cool, especially since the International Women's Week was this week. It's really cool to see that. And so I had a few listeners reach out and, you know, tell me that they really connected with the folks who came on the trip. And yeah, I think that's really important too. Just so, you know, oftentimes we hear, sometimes we go on these trips or people do some of these excursions and it seems like it's out of your grasp. It seems like you can't really connect to it because it's not at your level or whatever. And I think this just really kind of showed everybody that, you know, you can pretty much do it if you want to do it. As long as you have a good support staff and a good team going in and, you know, and all of the stuff we covered in the podcast, I think people really connected with.
Yeah. I really enjoy, I was thinking about this today and like, It was like the similar to the Margaree River trip last year. And then we went to Kedgy for like a week or 8 days, like, and this Highlands trip, you know, you become such a bonded group during these trips and you're completely focused in the moment and with that group and what's happening in that moment, that day, whatever, that you constantly want, you don't want that trip to end. by the end of it, you're just like, we just, you know, spend another day. Well, maybe not your ankle. Your ankles and feet probably didn't want to spend any more time out there. But that's how I feel every time. It's like at first, everybody's trying to figure everyone out and figure out where they lie within the group. And then once you start gelling as a team, it's very hard to realize that it's coming to an end and then you're going back to real life. That's the beauty of doing stuff like this. That's kind of removes you from your comfort zone. And I mean, like I said, in the blog post that I put up too, I mean, I learned just as much from the people that were coming on the trip as they probably did off us. Because every group comes with its own set of challenges, experience levels, like all kinds of stuff. You know, it's never, we're just going to go up on this mountain and go from point A to point B. I think Alex summed it up, who was one of the other guides, Alec Fort, and he made a post saying like, there's a clear distinction between a trip and an adventure. And he said a trip is like going from point A to point B. You plan things out and things, you know, it might go wrong, but essentially you're going from point A to point B. And an adventure is when you make that plan and you have to make game time decisions. I'm paraphrasing and I'm probably messing the whole quote up, but, yeah, an adventure is something that's it's been planned, but things change and you have to make game time decisions and it ends up becoming something other than what you thought it was supposed to be.
And I think we had a lot of those situations, you know, we had a lot of hurdles to overcome with regards to weather and time and the terrain and stuff like that. And, yep. You know, navigating that as a group was really awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, we're not doing a whole other podcast about the Silence trip, but yeah, I agree. We just get talking, man. And I get so inspired by stuff like this and it just fires me up to keep pushing and keep doing things and thinking up weird trips like this Margaree River trip, this year, that we're going to bring out and stuff like that. But yeah, so this podcast is for anybody looking to plan for the summer, this coming summer on Cape Breton Island. We're going to be, you know, I figured we'd talk about our favorite things to do in the summertime, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
So you want to kick it off? What are we going to go with first?
What is your favorite summer activity?
Summer activity. Morning showers in the river.
Yeah. Morning baths.
Dude, man, it's my favorite thing. Get up in the morning, roll out, start coffee, drive down the river, go for a swim, and it's like completely silent. And everything's calm. You know, it's at like calm in the morning. The mist is slowly rising and it's like silent. There's nobody there. It might be a guy fishing up on the river, but you jump in and swim around, you're to yourself before everything starts and you kind of ground your day out that way. That's like literally my favorite thing to do in the summertime.
Totally.
And if you're in Margaree, there are one, two, three bridges that you can jump off of at the moment. Used to be four, but, and really nice swimming holes. So Ross Bridge, AKA Portree Bridge. We used to jump off Cranton, but you can't anymore. You can go swimming at Doyle's and East Margaree Bridge. Those are my favorite things to do, is go swimming at either one of those bridges in the summertime. For sure. For sure. Other than that, I don't know.
Yeah, I had a few of those bridges on my list too, but I'm a big fan of Margaree Harbor Beach and Chimney Corner and Inverness Beach. Those are like, you know, piece de resistance for beaches around here.
Really? You're not over your way beach? You don't go to those beaches?
You know what? I'm not a big beach guy on this side of the island. I like to go swim in waterfalls. So, like Island View or, you know, even down in the ocean at Ferry Hall.
Yep.
That's one of my favorite spots too. I got a blog coming out that talks about Ferry Hall a little bit for those of our listeners who don't know. But yeah, so I think, I don't know. I lost it.
The energy, buddy. The energy's not here today.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Big long day. Yeah. I know that one and sunsets. Hitting sunsets, another big thing. I mean, I'm not a big fan of bonfires. If anybody that knows me, I'm not a bonfire guy. I do, however, enjoy a nice orange sunset from either one of the beaches, or my ultimate favorite is in Pollitt's Cove. So if anybody is listening to this podcast knows the sunsets in Pollitt's Cove on that beach with the smell of bonfires, even though I'm not a bonfire guy, I don't like going to the beach and making bonfires.
Yeah.
But the smell, it just, it triggers things in me from when I was a kid and when we used to go out there, and before the hundreds of people were traveling there, all the logs that were washed up on the beach, we would make into rafts and raft in that little pool at the end of the brook there, and hang out there all day. So that's kind of what it reminds me of, swimming, you know, swimming in that ocean during sunset with like the smell of fires in Pollitt's Cove.
I think we got to do a couple of beach sunset dance parties again this year.
Oh man.
Yeah, that was really fun last year.
Yeah, so to give everybody listening context, we were hosting a retreat, meditation yoga retreat, in July or early August last summer. And for anybody that had been to our concerts, normally afterwards, Canary would set up the DJ gear in the barn and we would have a dance party until probably like 1 or 2 in the morning after the shows. So when my friend Autumn, who runs the company that was coming down to do the retreat, came down to Marguerite, I pitched this idea of doing a pop-up dance party, sunset dance party at Marguerite Harbor Beach. And we ended up going down with a pop-up tent and speakers, music, and we literally had a bonfire. You're spinning fire. That's what it was. And everybody was cooking and eating, and Canary was spinning fire, and we were spinning beats and right for sunset. It was probably something that I had been trying to do or wanting to do for like 10 years. And we finally did.
We'll do a couple this year and put the invite out online.
Just can't make it too crazy. Not evolved status crazy, but
no.
Okay, so
email list only.
Yeah. So if you didn't sign up for that, head over and sign up. Yeah. So let's move on. Okay, so even though we are a campground, I want to get Canary's input on favorite places to camp or stay during the summer around the Cabot Trail. This doesn't have to be like actual accommodations. I was more or less thinking we'd chat about like maybe a little cool spots, maybe some like private campgrounds or, you know, parks campground, whatever, man, whatever, wherever you stay. I mean, other than sleeping in a hammock at my place underneath the cookhouse, that's off the list, but you know, anything else?
I like to go camping up on Cape Dauphin Mountain.
Yep.
There's a lot of wildlife up there, and the forest is really active at night. So you can hear a lot of rustling, and you can hear some coyotes, and you can hear some owls and stuff like that. Also, one of my favorite spots to stay is the hostel. Highlands Hostel. We did a podcast with Bryson a few weeks ago, and they're really awesome people. And the Markland is up there as well, which is like an older style kind of resort with a bunch of cabins, and that's a really, really cool spot, especially if you're getting up and like hiking Sugarloaf or Tenerife or something like that. Really, really spot on place to stay.
Well, you beat me to that one, because that was going to be the top of my list.
Was it?
Oh, buddy. Yeah, it's like my favorite spot to stay when I'm at a Marguerite. Like, so before we started doing the campground, I think maybe after the first year, and it was around the same time Bryson was kind of starting up too, I ended up down in Nicaragua, right? And I think I knew Bryson then. I think I knew he bought the church, but I thought he was just doing a museum. I didn't think he was doing a hostel. So anyways, I went down to Nicaragua, and my friend had a hostel in San Juan del Sur, so we hung out there for a while, and they had a network of hostels that, you know, people that worked and stayed at his hostel, which was the party hostel in San Juan del Sur. They would leave from there midweek and go over to an island, which was, you know, an hour or two drive and then a ferry, Ometepe, and they stayed at a place called Little Morgan's there, and that was the chill spot on this island, and then those people would come over to San, so there's like this share where these hostel workers and owners and people, they would kind of like cycle around to places. And then I was like, man, I wish that we could do something like that here. And then when I got back, Bryson started the hostel, and then I started hanging out there and going there. And that's like, that reminds me of that vibe that's down there, because I get to get out of Marguerite and go up north, 2 hours up north, which is a completely different zone, and hang out at Bryson's, do Tenerife and, you know, Meat Cove Mountain, or, you know, all those little hikes, or go swim at the beach there, which is absolutely massive. And kind of like get away from Marguerite, but I'm only like 2 hours away. So yeah, that is my number one favorite spot to go. Hands down.
What are, do you have any other favorite spots that are to stay?
Off the top of my head, summertime, I don't really get out much. Where else was I? I'm trying to remember now, but I can't. Meat Cove Campground, always a good spot if you're leaving to go do Lowland Cove. But, I mean, again, Paul's Cove. It's pretty much a hostel in Paul's Cove, really, now that I'm thinking of it, is where I go in the summertime if I'm wanting to get away from people. not to make that sound a little bit shitty, but, yeah, when I want a break from the chaos that is my house.
Yeah, totally.
In the summertime. Yeah. Bryson's are hot.
What are some favorite waterfalls?
Man, I bet you have a big list, eh?
I got a big list, but
yeah, I'm gonna number one all time favorite waterfall to visit, but it has to be a certain way you get there, because it's the reward at the end, is Turner Brook. There is a route from the top, which has been popularized in the last few years, where you come down off the mountain and come on off Parkspur Road. However, when we were kids, and I've talked about this in the one with Benoit, we heard about this, and it was like this fabled story of this monster waterfalls, and you had to like swim a section and all this sort of stuff. So it was this big adventure of going up there. And the brook leading up, because you got to know which branch to take, because there's all these brooks that branch into it, and you got to know, like, it's a second one, I believe it's a second. If you're listening to this, don't take my word for it, look it on a map and make sure that it's right, but I'm pretty sure it's the second brook on the left or right. And then you have to scale a bunch of waterfalls, like ones that are probably like 30, 40, 50 feet high to get into the valley, and then you have to swim a section and climb up. I think you can scale up around it, but I like forcing people to swim it, because it's like this more of a experience. Yep. Like, oh my God, we got to swim now. Yeah. You get to strip down all your clothes and swim through this thing. That's my number one. My number two, Second Forks, mostly because of the hike up. And again, there's a quick access route from, pretty much Cape Clear down. However, the hike up into the wilderness area is like amazing. It is crazy beautiful. You're in huge, massive old growth hardwood stands, which are just monsters, especially if you're there in like, you know, July, August, September, when all the ferns are up and like all the small trees are full bloom. Like it's crazy. Other than that, Gerlach Falls. Yep. Gerlach Falls is a really good one. So those are my top three. So I will go.
I think mine are Turner Brooks on that list for me too. Although I've only ever taken the trail down from Pembroke Road. But I don't recommend anybody taking Pembroke Road. You will destroy your vehicle trying to drive up that. And there's no place to turn around until you basically get to the falls. So once you start going up it, you're kind of stuck going ahead. So I don't recommend anybody take their vehicle up that. It's not for vehicles. The Fairy Hole, one of my favorite spots. You get a Mi'kmaq legend, you get a waterfall, there's a cave, there's cliff jumping. You can do all kinds of stuff up there. And, you know, there's a lot of history up on that side of that mountain. And if you have a good guide, your guide will tell you all about the history of that place. But I'm going to write a blog on that. And then I think like Humes River Falls, I really enjoy, takes you through a few different, ecosystems, and you know, there's a lot really, really healthy forest up there, and the waterfalls are a really beautiful place to swim in the summer. So yeah, those are probably my three. Although Second Forks is up there too, and just for anybody who might want to come with us to Second Forks this summer, make sure that you have really good footwear. Because the first time I did it, I wore Nike trail runners, and they were like pretty new when I started out that trek. And when we got back to Lee's the next day, I threw them right in the garbage. They were ripped and torn, and the sole was falling off, and like they were in rough shape. They were basically disposable. So yeah, the hike up to Second Forks through that forest is really beautiful. And it's, you know, it's challenging in a different kind of way. Like, it's not challenging in the aspect that you gain so much elevation, because you really don't. It's just that the terrain is really challenging, scampering the riverbank and stuff like that. Yeah, it's a real adventure.
Yeah, that's probably you're the second person that's happened to going up there with us.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, when I suggest I send out a gear list and it's like, you know, hiking shoes or boots, that's what I mean, not trail runners, sneakers.
Yeah.
But yeah, it used to be a trail all the way up, but you can notice it when you go up, because nobody ever goes up there in the summer. There's maybe a handful of people that ever venture up that way. So you can really tell when people have gone up by the grass. Like, if the grass, you can tell somebody's walked down the grass. Like,
yeah,
I was there one time. I was guiding a trip up, and I hadn't gone up in like 2 years, and I remember crossing the river twice. You only have to cross the river once, for those of you listening. I'll give you a quick tip. If you ever want to hike up that hike, there is a trail that goes up to the base of Cape Clear. So it goes through a guy's property. It's a privately owned piece of land. You'll see when you go up his driveway, there is signs that say hiking over motorized vehicles. So you have to park at the end of Big Interval Road before it turns off. There's a little wooden bridge. So when you go, if you're familiar with Big Interval, when you drive up towards to go to Margaree Salmon Lodge, there's a green bridge. It is the border of the sanctuary, the fishing sanctuary. So the Margaree River, you can only fish below the Big Interval Bridge. Upwards from the bridge is the fishing sanctuary. So when you go across the bridge, you take a right and you head north. When you get to the wooden bridge, park there, walk through Mike's driveway. You'll see signs that say hiking, hikers welcome, all that sort of stuff. You walk by his house, down the hill, across the field, by the lake, and there's kind of like a sign that marks the trailhead. It's like a fishing notice that says that this is a protected area and that sort of stuff. And you'll find the trail, and that'll take you right to the base of Cape Clear. Follow the river all the way up on the left-hand side until you get the Second Forks Brook. Cross the brook, take the right side of the brook all the way up to the falls. And it's roughly around round trip, probably 6 hours is what it generally takes us when we guide trips. That's with a break at the falls. There has been other people that have taken 7 hours round trip or longer. So if you need any information about that hike, reach out. We do a couple overnight guided trips a year up there. We'll be hosting some this summer. We'll have the dates on the website soon, because I'm building out a new section of our website to house all of this stuff with a lot of information, including elevation gains, you know, terrain types, difficulties, what to look out for, proper gear list, that sort of stuff. Yeah. Anyways, I was going to say something, but I totally forgot. So let's move on to the next topic.
Yeah. I just want to say too, is like, I think like one of my favorite things in the summer is when people ask me to guide them places, like I have a lot of people ask me, you know, where can I collect sea glass when I come to town? Where can I go get fossils? You know, where can I find this certain type of mineral? Because I want to make something out of it or whatever. So I really enjoy taking people up to some of those places, caves and stuff like that, that most people wouldn't really know about, or you can't find anything published on them. So yeah, just like, I don't know. I personally love that stuff. What are some gift shops, Lee? What are some places people can buy some knickknacks or some art, some stuff from art, local artisans?
I'm trying to remember the place in Bedeck, which is like the old ice cream shop near the credit union. It's eluding me right now.
Hold on. I have this. Called Flying Kite.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Great spot. They had their, I meant to buy it and I meant to go back and I totally forgot before Christmas. So if you're listening, whoever was working there, I'm sorry. I'm getting back sometime. they have a bunch of stuff from local artisans in there. I had never been in there, right? So I've been supposed to stop in. I meant to stop in so many times, haven't been in, went in for Christmas to pick something up. Tons of stuff in there. I just noticed the ice cream shop because that's what it was when I was a kid in Bedeck. Of course, the outdoor store, which is in Bedeck as well. That's a family run store. Full disclosure, it's my aunt's place. She helps us out with pretty much outfitting almost anything that we need. That's where I get all the merino wool base layers, socks, that sort of stuff. They have a great shop there. That's where Canary got his Keen boots.
Sorry, I got my new boots.
Yeah. So for those of you that maybe read our blog post about layering up in the winter, Keen boots. I left out boots in there because I was talking more or less like clothing that you're going to wear, not footwear. But yeah, Keen boots are my go-to. That's what I have for the winter. That's what I got. Like I probably got a dozen people turned on to those boots. But other than that, if you want a story, if you want to talk, the best spot is Peter's gift shop in Margaree Forks next to the library. So for those of you who drive in the Margaree and fish there a lot, you'll know who I'm talking about. He's got a fly shop. It used to be the old visitor information center there too, but it's got signs that say property for sale and it's always for sale. Even though I've known ton of people trying to buy it and they never buy it. I think the sign is, it's almost like that scene in Don't Mess with the Zohan. When he's in New York and it's like tax sale, but that's like the thing to get people in there. But yeah, Peter's gift shop, he likes to talk ties, flies, and he's got those classic Margaree shirts. He's got like a heat transfer machine. So he's got this whole heat transfers that he puts on like shirts. And if you've seen anybody, kind of similar to what you were wearing with the Myra River thing.
There's a lot of those like small little gift shops. I tend personally to stray away from them when I travel. I usually like to get people something more unique and more something from a local artist.
We'll be talk on that point. The artisans.
I was gonna say Marguerite Boutique and Provisions in Shetty Camp.
Oh, that's new. Yeah, coffee shop. Yeah, that was on my list when we started talking about restaurants. But
And obviously the Salty Rose and Periwinkle, they support local artisans and, they have a lot of really cool stuff in there. Everything from glassworks to leatherworks to jewelry, all kinds of stuff. So,
yeah. And these are like, for those listening, these are kind of like Cabot Trail specific stuff. That is where, most of, say, my knowledge would come from, because I don't venture far away from the Cabot Trail for the most part during the summertime. So I don't have
that Tumax much. Gallery is in Marguerite too.
Yep, right across from the Dancing Goat. She's got a lot of stuff in there. We started selling our fishing hats, Marguerite fly fishing hats. And then of course at our place too, but then they became super popular and I couldn't keep them in stock. But little tip on those. I got new stock coming in soon. So for those of you that have been emailing, there you go. We got gift shops, which, you know, they used to be a huge thing on the Cabot Trail. Now they've kind of teetered off. There's been a couple places sticking around, new things popping up. But as far as like mainstays on the Cabot Trail, I guess my last thing that I want to talk about is favorite restaurants or pubs. And we don't have to stick to the Cabot Trail on this one, but, this is kind of the theme, but, you know, what are some of your favorite spots in the summertime? Because this, hey, listen, this could be ice cream spots. This could be cafes. You know, I know you like your ice cream.
I love a good ice cream. Yeah, the ice cream shop in Marguerite, love that ice cream shop. Love the Dancing Goat. Le Brie, I know, is going to be on your list. And the Red Shoe Pub is probably going to be on your list too. And those are my those are my spots. Yeah,
you killed it. You killed my list. No, yeah. So because of, like I said, I don't venture that far away in the summertime, so I kind of stay close. Le Brie is pretty much I'd hate to see what I spend every summer at Le Brie, to be honest. So that is probably where the majority of my personal expenses go to, is Le Brie, Cafe and Bar and Shady Cam. Always good for a nice rum and coke. And I'm a big fan of the fish and chips. Big portions. Yeah, my favorite spot. It's also a really good spot to upload everything, because the Bell internet is so horrible in Marguerite that I have to drive half hour away to upload absolutely anything, which is also a good excuse to get out in the evenings and go get some food. The Cabot Panorama used to have a really good seafood.
I was just gonna look up the name of it.
Yeah,
Panorama. Because for like a really, really nice, fancy, like kind of gourmet style restaurant, it's actually really affordable.
Yeah, yeah. They weren't open last summer because of, I imagine, COVID and all that stuff. The Public House is really good. I just, you know, there's only a couple things on there that I really like. But the Panorama, as far as a kind of a more classy joint, if you want to go out on a date. I went there one time and they had like this tomahawk, this like 50 some ounce tomahawk steak. It was like 100 and some bucks. And I was like, yeah, let's get it. Man, I was eating tomahawk steak for like days. So huge. It was like me and I think it was Allie. We're out there for dinner and I just kind of went splurged. And that was my breakfast, tomahawk steak for breakfast.
You know what? I got to shout out East Coast Empanadas. It's between English Town and Bedeck. Yeah, it's just a little food truck. For those of you who don't know, an empanada is like basically the traditional version of a pizza pocket. They're just absolutely deadly. So if you're looking to calorie load before or after a hike, stop into East Coast Empanadas.
Yeah, I didn't get there yet this year. There was one other thing they've been a part of a lot of events. So the Coastal Restaurant in Inganish, that would be my last suggestion. If you want a big burger, that is probably my favorite spot to stop at in Inganish. I would have put on here the Bite House, because Brian's restaurant up until he closed was like the number one spot that I would go to eat during the summer, if I could get a spot in the summertime. And of course, absolutely, we do a bunch of events with him. We're actually doing our Northern Barbecue series. We're doing another barbecue this year for our season opener, Canada Day. And that may or may not have Garrett Mason tied to it. I don't know. That might have been a leak. But for those of you listening that stuck on this long for this shitty podcast, that's the leak. That's a little tidbit of information I'm gonna give you. We're gonna put updates for that in April. That's July 1st weekend. Garrett Mason, Bite House, gonna be a rocker. But yeah, that's pretty much it for favorite restaurants. I don't want to kind of go deep into it, because, and I also, like, I'm not really interested in reviewing people that, you know, especially I haven't eaten at in the last year. These are just like the top picks for when you were going around, and I've ideally, like, I know that these are on pretty, you know, close to home from my location in Marguerite. But again, that's where majority of my experience has been in the last couple of
years. So to recap the leaks on this podcast is that there are some multi-day trips coming out.
Yep.
There are some events happening.
Yep.
With possibly some secret dance parties.
I would say there are definitely some secret dance parties. Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And then there's the leak of paddle trip down the river.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess I'll talk about the, I just want to mention about, you know, about the multi-day trips. They've been something that we've been wanting to do for a long time and just trying to see how they were going to work, logistically, and to see how each package was going to be, if, you know, put together for clients and for guests that want to come on board. It's really something that I've been trying to do for hell, for like, since we started this business, was to try to build a model where we do these trips, and put them on. So yeah, it's, I'm pretty excited to just have these going out and have the ability to actually do them. And I feel super grateful that we have the space, you know, the spaces that we can do the stuff in, and the fact that there's so much other stuff coming in the pipeline, like the Seawall Trail is starting development this year. Like the people from Parks Canada, have been in contact. They're looking at streamlining their backcountry permitting system. So that opens up the backcountry a lot more. I know that there's other routes that they've planned to open up and cut. I know some of them are, I think, I'm pretty sure some of them are already cut. So a little bit more backcountry hiking within the Cape Breton Highlands National Park. But yeah, I'm just, you know, it's exciting times for people wanting to explore and do more adventurous stuff here on Cape Breton Island, because I think like it's been a long time coming, and I really do think that with all this stuff happening with the Smokies, the Seawall Trails, a big push from tourism to really, especially in the last couple of years, about developing Cape Breton into like a adventure tourism hub for the Maritimes in Canada, I really think that you know, the next couple of years are going to be pretty awesome. But
I think I just want to mention too that, you know, if Live Life Intense doesn't offer a specific option, you could still put them in touch with a guide if they wanted a guide for something.
Yeah. Yeah. We have that option too. I mean, I've just been, you know, I had a bunch of calls this week doing it with just different people that wanted to have a guide through, you know, either take them around the Cabot Trail or, you know, put together a multi-day trip or two-night trip or something. So, we do that. So you don't have to join one of our pre-made trips. If you want to hire a guide for a specific reason, you know, just reach out, and, we have myself or Alec and a few other people that we, you know, see who's available and send them out with you and kind of go down the entire process. And what we've been really trying to do is give, like I said earlier in this podcast, was give like an educational experience. It's not just like you're hiring somebody to take you from point A to point B. Like, we'll bring you on board. We'll show you the gear that we use, why we use the gear, talk about navigation. You know, if you're, you know, if you want to go out and learn a little bit of map and compass, we'll teach you a little bit of map and compass, how to navigate with map and compass, give you the compass and, you know, see if you want to navigate it if we're doing backcountry. You know, what gear we use as far as like safety, you know, using our Garmin InReach, why are the InReaches so powerful as like a safety thing in the backcountry, that sort of stuff.
Having, you know, and being able to get like some information on local history, wildlife, ecology, all those things.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's tons of that stuff. We're always constantly trying to better ourselves as guides. And for us as a company, I've been in constant contact with Janet at Hike Nova Scotia about, you know, standardized courses for our crew, asking them about references to different courses we can do to better the staff or guides that we have on board, and just offer a better experience for everybody. And, you know, I'll be pretty honest. Like, there's people this week that emailed and they're like, hey, we want a guide to guide us around the Cabot Trail. We want to hike Fishing Cove and we want to hike, you know, Franny Mountain. And I'm just like, why are you hiring a guide? Like, you know, I mean, I can go with you for sure and teach you some things, but none of the stuff that we normally teach, navigation, that's sort of, you're not really going to need that on any of these hikes, right? They're all well-maintained Parks Canada trips. So
yeah,
if you still want to hire, yes, we can still do it. However, you know, you might, you know, if you want to do something a little bit more advanced, then I can do it. But, you know, that's the, that's kind of where I'm at. I just kind of like be honest to people. It's not like, hey, I want to hire you. Yeah, we're going to charge you all this money. No, I'll be realistic about it because it's all about having like a good experience. That's it. So
yeah,
if we can't provide a good experience or, you know, I don't think we should be in this business. So
we've got some sweet guests, I think, kind of lined up for the next couple of weeks before the summer kicks off.
Yep.
And got a bunch of blogs coming out.
Yep, and we'll talk on that real quick. Canary's been a blog writing machine. I wrote them last week. I was like, you want to write a couple blogs? And literally every day there's like two or three more coming into a folder. So, yeah, just trying to give more information about, he wrote one about, what was it, the historical, like six historical hikes or seven historical things in Cape Breton?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a really cool one.
Places for the history buff to visit. Did one on the Port Dauphin Traverse, did one on gifts for the hiker, did one on gift shops and all different kinds of stuff. So, yeah. So maybe our visitors this year will be a little bit better informed and can plan their trips a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit better.
And that's kind of what it's like, all this, these little like details and lists and stuff. It's just easy for us to have reference material moving forward. So if somebody asks a question, if you have any interest in it, we can just send you a blog with all that relative information. Also for guests, what we got coming up, Denis Thibault, correct? Denis, yep, on board. Yeah. So Denis is, he's a whitewater and canoe guide. Used to work out in West, lives in Sydney now. He supplied us with the canoe that we pretty much demolished last summer on the river. He joined us at Kedgy. We're also, speaking of canoeing, we've got Noah Booth from Northern Scavenger. If you have watched any of Northern Scavenger's YouTube videos, you know who Noah is. If you don't, he is one of two guys that run a YouTube account called Northern Scavenger. They do a lot of massive expeditions, and we're pretty fired up to chat with him. He joined Dave Green, who was on a previous podcast, on their Boreal to Barrenlands expedition 2 or 3 years ago. That was like a 60-day or 50-some-day trip over Northern Labrador. Yeah, look at them on Northern Scavenger at on YouTube. And we've got a bunch of other people in the works. So, yeah, we'll just leave it at that. This has been hopefully a little bit informative for a filler podcast, but, you know, whatever.
And, yeah, so reach out to us on all socials, Live Life Intense. I'm Sounds of Fire, Jonathan Canary on Instagram. And, yeah, we'll see you next week.
Yep, back to regular scheduled programming. Peace.